cussed up on. He's pulled up.
Well, I do have a little something to share, and this is a personal story. 24 months and a couple days ago, I descended upon a new journey, and I entered a new stage in my life after over 30 years of being a smoker. I became a non-smoker, so I just hit my 24-month mark on Monday, and I haven't had a cigarette in 24 months.
Very cool. That's pretty awesome.
You've met me in person, so you know how much I used to smoke.
Yep. Used to smoke a lot.
Yep.
Used to smoke while you cooked, kind of like the cook at Church Farm School, that the ex-Marine that used to cook while he was cooking big vats of shepherd's pie.
Yeah,
I don't think you ever get it in the. I don't think you got your ashes in the food. He did. He said it was nutrition.
How do you think they got that smoky flavor?
Yeah, that's it.
So, yeah, it's kind of like the cook from Beetle Bailey, the army cook from Beetle Bailey. But anyway, so yeah. So 24 months of being off the tobacco, and in a somewhat related story, it's been like, I don't know, 20 and a half months since my last rage murder.
Who was it?
Oh, I don't know. Just some random stranger that bothered me. So, but anyway. So, yeah, I consider that an accomplishment. You've been off of the tobacco and the vape for quite a while, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. My circumstances were a little bit different from yours. They were kind of health related, but they weren't such dire straits as yours were. For me, I just did not feel well. I felt unhealthy. I wasn't sick. I didn't get diagnosed with anything, so I didn't have that, oh, poop, it's too late, I better reverse course and change my evil ways revelation. It was more a matter of just... I didn't feel well. You heard me coughing during the breaks on many of occasions, and I'd have to hit the cough dump and so I decided that I did not feel well, and that was my motivation for quitting, and I quit. And I used, let's see now, what I use, a lot of willpower, a little bit of heroin, and the patch. No, I'm kidding about the patch. No, I'm kidding about the heroin.
The heroin patch? They sort of have heroin patches. They're, what is that thing that all the kids are doing? NyQuil? No. The stuff that kills you.
No. Oh, fentanyl.
Yeah. They have fentanyl patches for, like, people dying of cancer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really wicked stuff. A friend of mine, his son had leukemia, and towards the end, they were giving
lollipops.
Him these... They're giving him the patches, and when my friend was applying one of them, he touched it with his bare skin, and just basically turned into a noodle.
Wow,
that's how potent it was.
They have lollipops too, fentanyl lollipops for kids.
Yep, but anyway,
what a time to be alive.
I use the patch. Yeah, this modern technology is amazing. When you meet a girl and she says that she's on the pill, if she means oxy, it might be a problem.
Did that delay go away?
But yeah.
You're rehearsing your stand-up routine? Sounds like it. I like it. I like it a lot.
I'm rehearsing my sit-down routine.
It's kind of like the ANCAP. Where's that place they used to do comedy? Upstate New York? Catskills.
Oh, the Catskills humor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not Jewish enough for the Catskills, though, I don't think.
No. Well, they had, you know, they had some goyim doing the dishes, I think.
Yeah, I might be like 1/64th or something like that. I don't know.
Not me. I'm not no Jew. I'm part black. That's my racial component.
So you're part Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah. Well, he's Jewish. So not
yes.
me. Yep.
So anyway, yeah, the patch. I use the patch as my crutch, my little step down.
You still in the patch for 2 years?
No. I used it for roughly about 90 days. And the reason for that is there's two types of addictions that go along with tobacco use. You have the physical nicotine and everything else. You know, the whole twitchy thing. And then you also have the psychological, the inhalation, the oral fixation, Yeah, basically the psychological habit of it. And one of the things I did to disrupt it was before I quit, I changed up my smoking schedule, because a lot of people, they would smoke at pretty much the same time every day. You know, you get up in the morning, have that first cigarette.
Yeah, every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then lighting one off the work.
I wasn't quite that bad. I only did that about half the day. But, you figure the 10 o'clock break at work, and then after lunch, and you can pretty much set your clock by it. Or you can set your cigarettes by your clock. I don't know. But I disrupted that, and I started smoking at different times to kind of break that habit, break the rut. And that was pretty helpful. So anyway, bottom line, though, I quit.
Go ahead.
I quit because I wanted to quit, and I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, I couldn't do it anymore either. I quit smoking a bunch of times. Quitting smoking's easy. I've done it dozens of times. I probably have done it dozens of times. And, you know, anywhere from a week to... One time I quit for 3 years and then started back up. And it's hard. They say it's harder to quit. I say it's harder to kick than heroin. And as someone who was addicted to heroin for about 5 years in the late 80s, early 90s, I agree with that. But... part of the reason for that is you can't generally relapse as easily, because you can't, like, bum a hit of heroin off somebody. Well, some places you can, but, you know.
Lucy.
We have Cal.
Who's Lucy? Yeah, is that Cal?
Cal's here.
Hi, Cal.
Hey, Worms.
Hey, Cal. Worms. And
The Lucy is a single individual.
Oh, Lucy.
Cigarette.
Lucy. A Lucy heroin. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you met your friend Lucy. Like, if you're near her house, you could bum a hit of heroin. And Mackenzie, I do want to, like, this is a teaching hospital. I want to thank you for helping out and putting up with my little tirade. And Cal, when you get off the show, there are 3 angry emails from me that you should address. But basically, just, you know, get a Windows computer, man. You got to do it. You're bringing the fiends down. And you're great. You shouldn't be bringing the fiends down. But... there's your haircut on air. How you feeling, sir? You good?
Yeah, man. Very good.
You good? All right. Oh, I already spent $2,000 on a new one. Friend putting it together. Your friend's been putting it together for weeks, though. It takes a night to put a computer together, man.
He's been waiting for the parts to come in.
Buy him some crystal meth and get it done tonight. By the end of the show. By the end of the show. Email him, fax him some drugs. I'm kidding. Yeah. Just a big old coffee enema. Coffee enema.
Some Kratom?
Kratom coffee enema. Kratom's in the coffee family.
Yeah, we got it.
All right. It is?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big family. I did not know that. You know? Something else is in that. What's in? I think quinine's in the same family. A lot of good drugs in that family. Drugs. All right. I'm going to pass the torch off here to Cal. You ready to rock, Cal?
Worms.
I thank you for your service, and it's been nice here going blah, 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 for I'm multitasking. I'm laying out a chat book for the kind. We're doing so you know how albums used to have liner notes and, like, you know gatefold sleeves, and you'd clean your taste seeds out of your weed and roll your joints on Dark Side of the Moon while reading the lyric sheet and going, wow, man. You know, remember that, you guys? No. Am I being detained?
I was a kid when Dark Side of the Moon came out.
Cal's going to say, am I being detained? Have you ever listened to Pink Floyd? Am I being detained?
Am I being detained?
That's. I think that's probable cause in Wyoming. If you listen to Pink Floyd, it's hurt your house. But, you know, like, records used to be a physical thing you held in your hand. And I like the digital stuff. I embraced it really early. I was, like, making and sharing MP3s on the internet in 1997. But I like the albums, too. They had this magic to them. So we put out a digital record. We're giving it away and selling it digital. But, also, you know, we're putting out a printed book, a 24-page, really nice color book. It has the lyrics. We're going to sell for, like, $5.55. It's just below Satanic. It's $5.55, not $6.66, because we're good.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Martin Dean and his weird
Worms.
Friends. Tasting you with liberty since 2011.
Like
Learn
Cal.
More at freedomfiends.com.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Freedom Fiends. And we are back, front, and on your side. Freedom Fiends on your side.
Yes.
So, Michael, you're going to make some more comments.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to repeat everything I said during the break because it was kind of funny. I was talking about Cal and how he needs to get his act together and get a Windows computer and join the dark side so he can use Fiend Phone. And he said he's on it. And I said, yeah, you know, with anybody else, I would have fired you by now for making me work more to have you on the Fiends. But I'm willing because you're really good and you're like the Hans Hermann Hoppe of Liberty or something.
So to speak.
Yes, so to speak. So, but, you know, in a year or two when you get sick of me and you've done a bunch of shows and you're great and you're ready to, like, really shine on your own podcast like everyone does. Everyone leaves and starts their own podcast or joins Jim Jesus' podcast, which is the website is xfreedomfiends.gov, I think, isn't it? It's like everybody, it's even current fiends. They sneak behind my back and do it and don't tell me about it. But Lou does it. Didn't you do it recently? I know Jeremy did.
No, I've never been invited.
I don't listen to it, not because I don't like it or want, you know, not because I don't want to, but I don't have time. I don't have time to listen to this show anymore, actually. But it's good and it runs itself. You know, it's kind of like it works while I sleep. No, the other thing I was going to say is, you know, when he finally leaves, when Cal finally leaves after a few years, he'll have the great mic he bought and the skills he was taught. That's his pension on the Fiends. You work for free, then you quit or get fired. Cal's going to quit. I'd never fire him. And then your pension is what you learned here. By the way, speaking of things that are useful, Cell 411. Do you guys know about this thing, Cell 411?
I've heard mention of it.
Yeah? Cal, you know about it? Are you using it, Cal?
Yeah, I got it. Hey, Cal. My friends are joined up, too, on Liberate.
Okay. Cool. Nice. Have you used it yet to when you're being detained?
Oh, right. Yeah. No, I've not been detained. I'm good at the evasion aspect of it. So I think that's also just as important.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I read this book called Not You and the Police by Boston Tea Party. That's really good, too. But this other book called, I forget what it's called, but it's written by an ex-cop who's now an attorney. And his basic premise of the whole book is if they don't know you exist, they can't arrest you. So it's all, you know, it's things like don't drive around with a tail light out and blasting loud music and weed smoke coming out of your car. You know, have your car look like a straight family's car, you know, or even if it's like a beater and you can't afford a good car, like have it up, have it registered, have it, all this, you know, have the government paperwork in line. So if they can, you know, most people in jail, something like 65% of people in jail ended up in jail from something that started with a traffic stop. So
exactly.
Don't stop. Yeah. Don't stop. But you, if you do get stopped, use Cell 411 from getcell411.com. It's a great app, free app made by our friend Virgil Viduva, who is like the Hans Hermann Hoppe of Liberty from Romania. I think it would be a good way to describe him. With an Audi, who drives an Audi. Yep. Yep. I wouldn't drive an Audi if I were rich. If I were rich, I would have 400 acres and a pickup truck. Because an Audi gets you pulled over, too.
Are you rich off of your Bitcoin yet?
I actually sold my Bitcoin to... No, I shouldn't say this on radio. I'll crash the price. Yes, I who created Bitcoin, Bitcoin, sold most of my Bitcoin today and bought Ripple.
Bitcoin, now known as Pump and Dump Coin.
It's pumping. It's not Pump and Dump Coin. Oh, Bitcoin is Pump and Dump? Yeah. At this point, no. I didn't make much money on Bitcoin. I had a lot of fun, though.
You inflated it up to, like, what, 9 cents a piece?
It's like 9 cents, man. Like, we made a crap, a poo coin, and, you know, it had, like, one programmer, then another programmer. Like, I invented it, and then people did the work for me, you know, like everything I do. I came up with the idea. And then, like, I turned it all over to this other guy because I was sick of, like, people screaming at me, like, help me with my wallet. How do I do this for no money? So I just handed it to some other guy, and he hasn't done anything with it. Like, you know, I still have access to the website even though he's hosting it. I go on and, like, you know, approve the comments and update the plugins and stuff. He's not even doing that. He took off. So Bitcoin is completely without, now that I've sold mine, I can say this, it's completely without a dev team or even a dev or even a programmer, but it's still going and it's still being mined and it's gone from 2 cents to 9 cents. It is self-aware.
It's like a Somalia of coins.
You could quadruple your money if you bought
the government.
Bitcoin.
The government of Bitcoin collapsed, hey, and Bitcoin grew.
That's better than government bonds. Government bonds don't pay that much.
Go to freedomfiends.com.
Government bonds take 100 years to go up four times. All right, guys. Have a great show.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
We are back. It's Lou and Cal. Michael has gone off to count and stack his Somalia coin. And I call it Somalia coin because, as he mentioned, all the developers retired and nobody's running it. And it became self-aware, kind of like Skynet, and increased in value. And the neat thing about Somalia, the country, was after the government collapsed because it was a failed socialist state, which is one of the things that these commie move to Somalia types never really understood. Understands how it got to be Somalia that they know of. It's a failed socialist state, but Bitcoin has become self-aware. It's Skynet. It's increased in value just like Somalia did. Yeah, Somalia went up to like 9 cents a piece after the government collapsed. Now, actually, all the metrics that are usually used to measure quality of life in a particular area, darn near all of them went up, like lifespan, murder rate went down. Murder rate in Somalia shortly after the government collapse was lower than Detroit. They had probably the best telecom service in all of Africa, and it would compete with first world country telecom service too. So Somalia coin, get some, mine it on your chromed robot turd. And speaking of Somalia, people are always using the move to Somalia fallacy, and it is a fallacy, and we're going to talk a little bit about that particular fallacy tonight. But starting off, what is a fallacy? And this comes to us from Wikipedia, and it says, a fallacy is the use of invalid or otherwise faulty reasoning or wrong moves in the construction of an argument. A fallacious argument may be deceptive by appearing to be better than it really is. Some fallacies are committed intentionally to manipulate or persuade by deception, while others are committed unintentionally due to carelessness or ignorance. That's called being a dumb butt. Lawyers acknowledge that the extent to which an argument is sound or unsound depends on the context in which the argument is made. Fallacies are commonly divided into formal and informal. A formal fallacy can be expressed neatly in a standard system of logic, such as propositional logic, while an informal fallacy originates in errors in reasoning other than an improper logical form. arguments containing informal fallacies may be formally valid, but still fallacious. So the move to Smalley fallacy is ergo decido. Do you have that up?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the term ergo decido. And yeah, the stats that you're mentioning about Somalia are right on point. A lot of people don't know about like life expectancy going up when there was no government, right? That's a big thing.
Access to food and water and medicine.
Right. GDP per capita, what, $210 in 1991 went up to $600 in 2011.
Yeah. And there was an international airport, Mogadishu International Airport, and it was remodeled while stateless. But of course, they had to have an airport because there were no roads.
Right. My roads.
So the ergo decido fallacy, and once again from Wikipedia, ergo decido, Latin for therefore leave or then go off, a truncation of argumentum ergo decido, and colloquially denominated the traitorous critic fallacy, denotes responding to the criticism of a critic by implying that the critic is motivated by undisclosed favorability or affiliation to an opt-out group, rather than responding to the criticism itself. The fallacy impliedly alleges that the critic does not appreciate the values and customs of the criticized group or is traitorous, and thus suggests that the critic should avoid the question or topic entirely, typically by leaving the criticized group. So one, it's you hate America because you don't bow down and lick Trump's boots or lick the police's boots. So therefore, you have to move to Somalia. And argumentum ergo decido is generally categorized as a species of informal fallacy, and more specifically as a species of the subclass of ad hominem informal fallacies. In politics, argumentum ergo decido is directly related to the tu-quoque fallacy when responding to a political criticism, as whataboutism is used against external criticism. Ergo decido is used against internal criticism. Example, critic, I think we need to work on improving United States taxation system. The current system suffers from multiple issues that have been resolved in other places such as Canada and Europe. And the respondent would say, well, if you don't like it, why don't you just leave and go somewhere you think is better? So usually at that point it's Somalia. Go ahead, Cal.
Yeah, I said, well, you know, why don't you move to Somalia? There are, I think, some interesting places where you could look at comparing countries, right? When people look at Somalia, they don't look at, you know, they compare Somalia with the United States instead of comparing Somalia with, like, the surrounding countries in Africa.
Like Ethiopia.
Yeah, like Ethiopia, right. And so, like, you know, they haven't really done their homework. It's like, you know, and then the response you would say then if someone says that to you, it's like, well, you know, if you love government so much and being told what to do, why don't you move to North Korea?
Exactly. But most of the people that tell us to move to Somalia would love North Korea, particularly the conservatives. North Korea is the conservative paradise. Mandatory patriotism and flag worship. They love the police and military there. They have police and military parades all the time. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of American conservatives that have got excited over the prospect of military parades here with missiles going down the road like it's in downtown Pyongyang or in Red Square in Moscow.
They also have a constitution, right?
Yes, and a Bill of Rights. Chapter 5, Article 67 of the North Korean Constitution guarantees the right of free speech, assembly, and freedom of the press. Article 68 guarantees freedom of religion.
Nice. And you don't have all those crazy hippie haircuts. You know, you have, I think, 12 authorized government haircuts that men are allowed to have.
Yes.
Nice and sharp, yes. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, it is definitely the way to go. And what really makes it the conservative paradise, tough immigration policy, strong border controls, and no Mexicans or Muslims.
Exactly.
They keep the Mexicans from invading North Korea. They're not going there taking their jobs.
It's a socialist utopia.
Exactly. It's really funny how the conservatives don't understand how really they are socialistic. But going back to Somalia, and I have this fascination with Somalia, and in my introduction to how things were there, and I don't even know that, I don't know if this was before or after I'd seen Black Hawk Down. It was after I'd seen Black Hawk Down several years later. But I was still new to libertarianism and libertarian ideas, and I think I was probably in that 5-minute min status phase that I had, because I wasn't there for very long. I accepted statelessness very quickly on. I didn't know all the things that I know now. I didn't have all the answers of, well, you know, who would build the roads and all that other stuff. I had some of those answers, but I had just given up on the idea of the possibility of good government. And I said, maybe we don't really need government for all this stuff. And somebody posted a video of Somalia being the libertarian paradise. And like you said, they don't take a look at it, and they don't look at, okay, well, how does Somalia get to be what you're pointing out as a horrible thing? Well, it certainly wasn't because of libertarianism. I don't think it's anything that you would advocate when you're out there doing your outreach to the commies and, under Liberate RVA.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Somalia was a failed socialist state. And if you look at Somalia the day before the collapse or compared to the day after, and you're not gonna find a whole lot of difference. If you go back 5-10 years, you're gonna see the same thing. But if you go forward 5 or 10 years, you see improvement. And if you compare the improvement in Somalia to the neighboring countries like Ethiopia, and I believe Kenya's in there too, if you compare what happened in Somalia, the advancements of against Somalia 5, 10, 15 years ago, and also the neighboring countries 5, 10, 15 years ago, you see that they jump by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, and then you find when they finally brought back government in Somalia, the security forces, there was also a boom and a more increase in rapes occurring from government security forces onto the populace. So it's not like, government's back and all of a sudden we have this great protection of life, liberty, and property. No, it came back to the return of violating in that very essence.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I'm going to throw a question at you here. We haven't discussed this, but this popped in my head. Something that conservatives like to talk about, they always talk about how less government is better. And quite frankly, the reasons that they give for less government it's actually an argument for no government whatsoever. What is your opinion? What's your experience? What do you think is the reason that they will say, well, we have to have some slavery, we have to have some sexual assault, we have to have some extortion and violence? Where do you think that comes from?
I think it's a way to reconcile that. You could say, like, a lot of conservatives have a lot of family in the military. There are more Republicans than Democrats in the military. And so, for them to not be able to look upon those family members and see them as, also socialists and also an organization that shouldn't exist, I think that's just a difficult area for them to, 2 + 2 = 4. And they have the wrong kind of idea of like trying to justify it instead. And I think that's like the minimal area which they will justify it, because they know a lot of people, they have families, they have relatives that are in the military, they have a history going back into that. So it's difficult for them to like eliminate entirely, because then that will kind of in a way, demean or, take away that history or that part of their family.
And here's the point where I play the part of the conservative and say, you dirty hippie anarchist, you don't know, you've never served, you never walked a mile in their shoes, to which you respond with...
I have, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, you were Air Force. I did 9 years in the Army. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby. Hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark. Bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Yes, worms. Worms, 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 worms. Worms everywhere. The early bird gets the worms. Freedom Fiends, this is Lou and Cal. We're coming at you live. Unless you're hearing the recorded version or the podcast. But anyway, yeah, going back to this whole move to Somalia fallacy, what it basically is rather than addressing the issues, people will say, well, you're unpatriotic, you hate America, or you hate this, and you need to go somewhere else, and completely ignoring what the problem is. And one of the things, we're going to talk about this a little bit in the break, one of the things that I've noticed, oh, and by the way, in case anybody didn't hear, when Cal and I criticize the military and the mission, we're both veterans. How long were you in the Air Force, Cal?
4 years, from 2004 to 2008.
Okay. I did 9 years in the Army, much earlier than Cal was in, because I'm, like, kind of old. But anyway, yeah, I was in at the end of the Cold War. And to give you an idea of the mission back then, how it's changed from today, back then the mission was to keep the Soviet Union in East Germany, so to keep the KGB and the Stasi from turning America into a police and surveillance state like they had done in their home countries. East Germany, the Stasi, would tap everybody's phones. Well, they tap as many phones as you could. And that's back in the day where you actually had to leave the office and go physically tap a phone. To tap, and they would open up people's mail. This is before email, so they would actually open up the letters and read them. They'd have to intercept them and everything. And the whole purpose of fighting the Cold War was to keep that from happening here. And you all need to thank me for my service, because it's not the Soviet government or the East German government that's tapping your phones and reading your email. That's your own government, and the whole. Ergo decido, or argumentum ergo decido, is going to be like, well, you're unpatriotic because you're pointing out what our country does and saying it's the same thing as them when it is, and that's unpatriotic. And there's an article that we covered, maybe a year ago, and with right-wingers, conservatives, Republicans, there's not a problem out there that can't be solved with more patriotism, more flag-waving. If something fails, it's because people didn't love the country enough. They didn't wave the flag hard enough. What do you think on that, Cal?
Yeah. I think a lot of this, you know, might go towards, like, trying to figure out, like, people think that we just won't have security, we won't have military. World wars would take over, you know. But that's Somalia. That was this civil war of warlords, and so, you know, they have warlords now. Government's returned, and things are going back into a more deplorable state. You know, but when you want to look at an example, like what would happen without a military, you look at, like, maybe the Bundy Ranch situation when it was an issue of property rights, and you had all this volunteer militia that went out there. To support that, to defend that.
Yeah, right wingers pointing guns at law enforcement. Blue right. lives didn't matter that week.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Blue lives matter. Oh, we're not doing that this week.
Right. So, you know, that's like an awesome example to show, like, you know, we can come together. We're the most well-known populace in the world. You know, it's not it's something that we can't do without the magical word evoked government to provide security. That's something that Americans do very well. Or just get some rooftop Koreans, you know. But
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I remember that. I've seen the videos of it. I remember when the L.A. riots happened, but I didn't really think about it. And then a couple of years ago, I saw the videos of the rooftop Koreans, and they've got their hunting rifles and other rifles, too, AKs, and they're defending their property because the police won't do it.
Right.
And they did for themselves what government, you know, only government can do, but wasn't doing.
Worms.
Yes, indeed. So we will be back in the second hour, and we're going to talk about this recent cop murder, and I know it's been talked about quite a bit. I'm not going to go into graphic detail, but there's probably definitely going to be some people that want us to move to Somalia when they hear the conclusions. But we're not going anywhere except to the market. We'll be back. Worms.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Freedom Fiends, second hour. Broadcasting through Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCON no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCON.org. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Cal from Richmond, Virginia. Welcome back, Cal.
Great to be on the show again with you, man. And looking forward to see you again this year in Michigan, right?
Yes, yes. Cal and I have met twice in the past. Both times were at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, and it will be held this year starting on Thursday, June 21st, and going through Monday, June 25th. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan. And the online registration hasn't started just yet. It should be starting pretty soon. You'll be able to go to mplfest.org. So round up your friends and family members and get them registered as soon as registration opens. And it's going to be a good time. There's a number of confirmed guests are going to be there. I believe Brett Vinat from School Sucks Podcast is one of them. I believe he's confirmed. And I've heard on a couple others, but I don't have like the double super duper confirmation, but it's going to be pretty good. I'm rather excited. I'm very happy about some of the names that I'm hearing. Some are returning guests. Go ahead, Cal.
I was going to say, I met Brett in person about like 2 weeks ago. He stopped by here in Richmond for his School Sucks podcast. He's doing that documentary tour. And I think he went through Michigan too, right?
Yeah, he stopped down Detroit, but it was on like a Wednesday. So I couldn't get down there because I'm like an 8-hour drive away from Detroit.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, that didn't work out so well. But a number of my friends went to that, and they had a really good time. And that's where he announced that he'll be at Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest this coming year. And there may be some discussion on the proper way to make bacon, but I think we can work that out.
Nice.
He's a baker.
No, I'm looking forward to checking out your assault kitchen.
Yeah, well, and it's one of those things you got to check it out while you're there. I serve breakfast every morning, and then on the final on Monday morning, I'll make a. I don't vend it. I just make up breakfast and feed everybody that's still there on Monday. So after everybody's broken down, I'll whip up like hash browns, scrambled eggs with bacon, sausage, kielbasa, and all sorts of stuff mixed inside. It's a stone soup of scrambled eggs, egg mix, but lots and lots of bacon, and the food for that final meal comes from donations from the attendees. So if people have a leftover package of bacon or leftover potatoes or leftover carton of eggs or whatever, they'll bring it over and they'll contribute to the group breakfast.
Nice.
Yeah, volunteerism at work. And you have a little get together that you organize each year too.
It's called Anarchon, and it's in Virginia, in Northern Virginia, so about east of D.C., and it's on a private campground, and the cool thing about the private campground is that there's also a shooting range on site, so we can learn and master the art of self-defense through firearms. So, yeah, that's every year during the summer. I think that's like maybe a month later after the Peace and Liberty Coalition Festival.
Yeah. Yeah, Mogadishu, Virginia, gun shooting.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been to a number of these different events. I've been to Pork Fest, which is probably the larger one. I haven't been to like Anarchy in New York City or Freedom Fest or Freedom Palooza or whatever it is out in California. But I have to say that I really like these smaller get-togethers. Agora Fest out in this group out of the Minneapolis area, they get together and they put something together in late September, I think it is, usually, or earlier late September, sometimes September. And this year was in North Dakota. I didn't get a chance to get out there. But I like these smaller venues and these smaller groups because it's a lot more intimate. You get an opportunity to get out and talk to everybody there. And it's not the fast-paced Pork Fest type deal where you always have these different events going on and you feel kind of pressured to do it. Well, I don't feel pressure, but people that like going to these different lectures and presentations, they stay pretty darn busy. It's almost like having working a full work day with their schedule.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. But, yeah, no, I like the Peace of Michigan Liberty Coalition Festival. That was a lot of fun. I look forward to being there again 2018.
Yeah, so Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, June 21st through 25th, mplfest.org. Registration should be opening pretty soon. So get your friends and family registered and come on out. Have a good old time. So we're going to change up and anger some people and get told to move to Somalia. We're going to talk about the murder of Daniel Shaver. Now, this article, one of the reasons I picked it is because it's from National Review. And National Review is definitely a right-wing leaning, well, not leaning, it's falling over to the right. Conservative, because the conservatives have their own little brand of communism, and it's a very, very right wing, very very pro authoritarian government and police and military and everything else. And something that we talked about earlier is the right wingers, the Republicans, they have this obedience fetish where, how could I put it? They have this fascination with control, with overwhelming control. As a matter of fact, like the tight grip of the empire, but they call it law and order is what they go with. So they have this fascination with law and order, and what it really is, it's just blind authoritarianism. But anyway, National Review. And they've been coming around a bit lately. While we're at it, let's talk. You had mentioned this earlier. What you feel the reason for the Republicans with the police and military worship? What was it that you came up with on that?
I was just saying that I think it's just there's a lot of military ties. Towards that, they have a rich history of that, and so you know it's difficult for them to reconcile that. Maybe perhaps their family and relatives that have joined the military were not actually defending the country, right? That mission has failed. You know, we continue to lose more and more freedoms every year, and not safeguarding it and protecting it here at home, where we're losing it instead of overseas. But then there's also like that aspect where people then are misled to believing that the police are here to protect you, like as if they have a duty to do so, when in fact there are many Supreme Court cases like DeShaney versus Winnebago County that have declared many, many times over that there is no obligation for the police to protect your life, liberty, or property. It does not exist. And so and many other subsequent Supreme Court cases have declared and ruled the same. So maybe there's that history, there's also misinformation. It's not something that government will be keen in telling you outright. And so that's my belief in why especially conservatives cling on to socialized security.
Mm-hmm. It's really funny how they say that the police are the thin blue line is the only thing between us and anarchy, meaning and their version of anarchy is Somalia with the warlords and the criminals and everything else. But they also cling to the Second Amendment, because the police can't protect you. Right. So if you ask them, why do you need guns? Because the police can't protect us. Okay, so why do we need police? Because they protect us. And it's this cognitive dissonance. And cognitive dissonance is holding two conflicting opinions at the same time or multiple conflicting opinions at the same time. It's this cognitive dissonance that perpetuates this nonsense. But by the same token, I don't want to just beat up on right wingers, even though they're easy targets. There's another easy target called the left winger, and these are the ones that say that government owns, or the corporations own the government, they buy off the government, buy off the politicians, and they have to be regulated. And when you ask them who they're going to be regulated by, they say, well, by the government, by the politicians. And it's like plugging a power strip into itself and calling it renewable energy. That's the logic that they're using with this. And, you know, it's the whole, well, we're going to use government to fix government. But anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say, well, at least the Republicans, conservatives advocate for a Second Amendment, for you to have guns to protect yourself. Liberals, on the other hand, are usually the kinds that says, you know, you shouldn't have guns, more gun control, you know, more of stripping away that right to protect yourself.
Well, actually, the conservatives and the Republicans are more about the Second Amendment than the guns, because they're the ones that use phrases like law-abiding gun owner. Okay, if you believe that in the Second Amendment, there's no such thing as a law-abiding gun owner. There's just a gun owner because there are no laws for anybody to abide by. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That means no permits, no magazine capacity limits, no restrictions in any way, shape, or form. And these people, you know, particularly the NRA supporters, they love their gun laws. They love their permission to exercise the right that shall not be infringed. And they love abiding by all the restrictions on that right that shall not be infringed.
That's right,
so,
true.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a meme that I made up. It's a SWAT team getting ready to go into a house, and it says, you can keep your Second Amendment. We're just here for the guns, because people have this notion that the Second Amendment protects stuff. No, it doesn't. The guns do. The Second Amendment is words on paper. All right, you're not gonna cast a spell on a cop by reading words on paper and get him to not take your guns any more than you're gonna cast a spell on a burglar by reading the robbery statutes to him. It doesn't work like that. It's not how this works.
You don't think that would have saved Daniel Schaefer?
No. As a matter of fact, I'm convinced that that cop planned on killing him long before he pulled the trigger. And we'll talk about that when we get back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends, and we are back. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Cal, and we're reading an article from National Review. It's called "The Police Murder of Daniel Schaefer." It's written by David French. Going back to a previous article that I'd read here on National Review, I don't remember who the author was, but as I had mentioned, they're very right-leaning, and they have a tendency to give legally blind support to the police. It's not completely blind. It's more legally blind. They can see a little bit in front of their faces. They're starting to come around. I think some of the conservative columnists are seeing the error of their ways in the blind support for the government enforcers. But anyway, this article starts off, "If you have the stomach for it, I want you to watch one of the most outrageous and infuriating videos I've ever seen. It shows a police shooting of Daniel Schaefer in Mesa, Arizona. He was crawling on his hands and knees, crying and begging police not to shoot him. An officer shot him anyway." And I've seen this video, and I've seen people die in front of me before. I'm usually not somebody who's bothered by these different things, and I have to tell you that when I watched this video, when I watched this scumbag pig of a cop execute that guy on the body cam footage, I cringed. I actually found this disturbing, and I'm not some wilting flower. I'm not somebody that cringes easily at this sort of thing, but this was particularly heinous. And have you seen the video, Cal?
I have. Yeah, it's everything about it. It's wrong. It's procedures. I used to do security forces in the military, so that's law enforcement and security. And we were never trained. There's never an instance where we were taught or demonstrated to have the person crawl up to you, right? And in the manner in which the directions that were given, we're a series of conflicting Simon Says. I don't know yeah. what it was.
To be honest with you, I've had some of the similar training that you've had, POW handling, and this was worse than any of the stuff that we would have done. This was absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, the article giving the description of what happens. The background is simple. Schaefer was a traveling pest control worker. He was in his hotel room, a La Quinta Inn, showing off to guests a pellet gun he used for work. Probably not the brightest idea. But anyway, police responded to a 911 call claiming that a man was pointing a rifle out a window. All right, I don't know if he was. I don't know if he wasn't. If this was just a matter of he had been showing off the pellet gun to the guests, which I personally think isn't the brave thing to do, but this raises a larger issue. This is the snitch culture and the fear of guns, even pellet guns. The fear of guns has been propagated, not just by, you know, the left-wing media, but also by cops. Because when cops see people with a gun, well, maybe not so much in rural areas like I live in, but definitely in the big city, when cops see somebody with a gun, like let's say somebody's carrying concealed and they're printing, the cops see that and their ears go up and they start looking at it. They're like, I need to find a way to question this guy and find out why he has a gun, because he's a mundane. He's not one of us. But anyway, this whole snitch culture thing is a problem, and people should not be freaking out over the existence of a gun. When police arrived, Shaver was alone with a woman. They had been drinking. The police ordered them out of the room, and they came out, raised their hands, and got on their knees. So far, things seem routine. Police responded to a call from a concerned bystander. Concerned troll. They were concerned that the suspect may have a gun. Oh, no! So they demanded to clearly see Shaver's hands. That's entirely fair and appropriate. Then, however, things got strange. Very strange. Rather than asking Shaver and his friend to keep their hands visible while police, who at this point had guns pointing straight at both of them, approached and applied handcuffs, they asked them to crawl towards police in a highly specific way. The Washington Post's account is decent, but you have to watch the video to truly grasp the strangeness of the request. And it was pretty strange because of the complexity of the instructions. Langley tells Shaver to keep his legs crossed and push himself up into a kneeling position. As Shaver pushes himself up, his legs come uncrossed, prompting the officer to scream at him. "I'm sorry," Shaver says, placing hands near his waist, prompting another round of screaming. And we'll be back after this trip to the market.
Listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Should have been. I must have done it. We are back. Freedom Fiends. This is Lou and Cal, and we are talking about the murder of Daniel Shaver. Up to this point, we're talking about the arrival of the police and the instructions that they gave him, and they're certainly complicated instructions. One thing that I wanted to mention here, and I want to go into the state of mind of how this guy would be, Shaver fellow. Most of you probably know that in my day job, I work in mental health, and I also teach a class on how to deal with patients that are in the severe stress level, and then also higher levels too. So basically, when the Schumer hits the fan. And one of the things that we know about people in the severe stress level, and if you have a crazed lunatic pointing a rifle at you and screaming at you, you're definitely in the severe stress level. People in this category, and people in this particular situation, are one because of the adrenaline that they have going at them. They are. They have tunnel vision. That with the adrenaline flowing, they have a loss of motor skills, so they're not able to do complex things. As example, if you go through a firearms course, they'll teach you that when you change out the magazine, not to use your thumb to release the slide forward. but to grab the slide, pull it back, and let it go, because you don't have the fine motor skills to be able to do that. That's the adrenaline going through you. That's all that extra energy. But in this case, the people have tunnel vision. They're not able to handle complex instructions, so you have to give them simple instructions. Tell them what you want to do. So, example, get on your knees. You don't throw a whole bunch of other words in there, and there's no need to say get on your knees or we will bleep and kill you, which is basically what was happening in this confrontation here. And because this guy is scared Schumerless, he wasn't following the instructions to a T. But these are complicated instructions. Now, Cal, I asked you during the break, in your time as a security force in the Air Force, you did some Op 4 role playing, correct? And Op 4 role playing is opposing force being the bad guy.
Yeah, we would do that a lot, often. Yeah.
Okay. So what is the tension level of the prisoners in this? I imagine that the training is not quite as heavy duty as real life, but did you see it as being stressful?
I didn't. I mean, I kind of had fun with it. But that's just me. It is supposed to be a high stress environment. Especially when you do the law enforcement side and getting the training and getting the suspect to obey your commands, or like to get out of a vehicle. There's a lot of commands that you shout, and usually when you get them down on the ground with their hands above behind their back, the next step would be to proceed with your handcuffs at the ready to handcuff them. Right? They're never in the 4 years of doing it was there ever a command or be shown or instructed to have them crawl towards you in such a manner.
Yeah, and that's what you see in this video, is you see this very complex telling people to crawl with their hands behind their backs and their legs crossed, kind of like they're snakes, like they're just going to slither across the floor, and that's pretty much what it came down to, and then constantly throwing in the or we will shoot you, and when you're in such a high state of fear, I mean, quite frankly, If a cop was under a fraction of that stress, he would have killed somebody and said he feared for his safety, feared for his life, and would have gotten away with it. And as far as I'm concerned, that should apply to if somebody had shot these cops, because these cops, they weren't out making an arrest. They were out basically being thugs and executing people. So you have six cops in this hallway here. And one of the excuses I heard earlier today was, well, they were worried about people jumping out from one of the rooms or anything like that. Looking at this video, you see in the hallway that to get to the suspect, you don't have a bunch of doors, but there's six cops. So if you're actually concerned about somebody jumping out of a doorway, then why not have four of those cops cover the doorways and one cop go up and slap the cuffs on this guy when he's down? So there's two people, and they get the first one cuffed, and I can't remember if they had the first person crawl, but anyway, they got the first person up there, and they cuffed that person, no problem. And the victim, Shaver, was down the hallway a little bit further, and they're shouting all these commands at him, and there's absolutely no reason that the one cop, the cop that did the shooting, could have kept his weapon trained on the suspect. Four cops could have secured the doors or made sure that nobody was going to jump out, and another cop could have gone and slapped the cuffs on him. But instead of doing that, they had to go through this weird, crazy game of Simon Says mixed with Twister, and they wound up murdering this guy.
He was begging for his life.
Yeah, he was begging for his life. Kind of like Kelly Thomas was. Kind of like Kelly Thomas when he was beaten for 20 minutes and then eventually died a few days later in the hospital. But he was begging for his life. Now, the jury saw this video. My understanding, and I've heard conflicting reports, but from what I understand, the jury has seen the video, but they only saw parts of it. And I'm not sure why that was. As far as this cop being found not guilty, I've ran into very few people that have defended his actions. of course, you have the typical move to Somalia types to say, well, he was following policy, or he feared for his safety, and or whatever. And they're going to defend a cop no matter what. Right? They're the ones that have the blind faith and blind support. You know, they're the types that if they get rounded up, put on cattle cars, and sent to camps, as they walk into the showers, they will thank the cops for their service. That's the type that's defending this guy. So you got this. You have a jury that has seen this video, or at least most of it, and they still came back with a not guilty verdict, which leads me to this: how much of a job, how much effort did the prosecution team put into convicting their coworker?
Right. People forget that they're all on the same side there, right? The cop works for the state, the judge works for the state, the prosecutor works for the state. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence that they don't show, or kind of in a way kind of portray the defendant, or in this case, not the cop, but who he killed, as guilty, right? They'll say, well, he was drunk. He was, you know, just reaching for a gun. You know, he had no weapon, right? It was kind of visible. It's shown on the video camera. You also show like evidence that were not admissible. They were not shown. Like there's the port of his gun where the bullets would fly off.
The dust cover on the ejection port. Yeah, it said you're Feinstein'd. It didn't really say Feinstein'd. It used the word that we use Feinstein to cover because we can't say it on radio.
And that was not allowed to show to the jury.
Yeah, because that would be considered prejudicial. Even though that goes to show the personality of the cop, Brailsford.
Right.
Which, if a person has a thug personality, if they have, and as a matter of fact, this would be called mens rea. The guilty mind. If you have somebody that is motivated to kill somebody else, if somebody has the desire to kill another person, and my personal belief, I can't get inside this guy's mind and find out exactly what he's thinking, but my suspicion is that this guy wanted to kill somebody.
Yeah, they're trained a lot in the police training, as if like every person that you're going to meet potentially wants to kill you. Whereas, you know, if the job is to protect people, you know, you have a different kind of mindset, right? Towards people, like you're there to protect them. But for them, they look at everyone else as a potential threat, a potential enemy. And I've been through the training videos, and they show like maybe 20 of them of like, you know, instances like throughout the many years they kind of compile it. And when they put it together as a montage of like, you know, cops being under duress, making it seem like it's an everyday affair, an everyday occasion. But in reality is, you know, it's not that many cops engaged. That's sort of not many cops actually ever take out their firearms. In 2016, there was about 135 police officers that died. You know, it's not this huge number in the thousands or in the hundreds that, you know, Hollywood or kind of makes it out to seem to be.
Yeah, most of them die from heart attacks.
Right. There is no war on cops.
Well, there's a war on cops, but it's being fought by donuts.
Right.
Because they're overweight and they have major health problems. As far as dying in the line of duty, automobile accidents are the number one cause. And we're not talking about they're on the side of the road committing road piracy and somebody hits them. We're talking about automobile accidents because they're crappy drivers,
right?
But they're not being hunted down and gunned down like you said, like in Hollywood movies. And I'm sure that more cops die in the average Hollywood movie than all year in America.
Right. So I think that's what it was. It's just the training. Sometimes, you know, it's a boring part of town. A lot of cops, you know, find a place to kind of nap through, or trying to find an adrenaline rush and finding something to do, which is why, you know, they always harp on traffic stops and, you know, looking around if there's anything else that they can do. Make them seem like, you know, action-packed superheroes. And I think that was the case for this instance. You know, they're kind of looking for a moment to pull the trigger, to have some Hollywood make-believe action and bring that in the real.
Yeah, I've seen videos where cops are being interviewed by the news, or maybe it's like a documentary type situation, and they will refer to the general public as the enemy.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised at that. And this whole militarization of the cops, if you look at how they dress, their uniforms, I have a firm belief that the more they look like Darth Vader, the more they start to act like Darth Vader.
Worms.
We'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's B-I-P-T-U-N-I-A. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha, biptunia.com.
Cool. And we are back. Freedom Fiends. This final story, we're gonna end on a lighter note. This final story, I was reading this article, and I got a couple paragraphs into it. My first indication that it was kind of goofy was when I read the title of it. Bitcoin is an insult to markets. So are the GOP tax cuts. So as I'm reading this, I start looking around the web page, and I'm trying to find out if it's a satire site mirrored as a real site, but it's from the Huffington Post, which kind of a satire site of its own. But so is it real or is it the Onion? Bitcoin is an insult to markets. So are the GOP tax cuts. Put them together and fake money could exacerbate real problems. So As this guy is criticizing Bitcoin, not that he has any real criticisms, but see if you can apply these criticisms to the Federal Reserve note, also known as the U.S. dollar. Bitcoin is an ongoing insult to market economies everywhere. It shouldn't exist. Indeed, in important respects, Bitcoin doesn't really exist at all. But a cabal of techno-hucksters have convinced gamblers and the gullible to quite literally buy into the idea that it does. Huh. Strange. I think only about 10% of the 10% of the money supply is in physical cash. So would that mean that the Federal Reserve note and the U.S. dollar doesn't actually exist, if we apply that logic? Maybe.
Exactly.
Bitcoins, which began the year trading below 1,000, have skyrocketed to well over 16,000 since the late summer frenzy of pure speculative madness. Ooh, the animal spirits that Keynes talked about. We've seen mortgages being taken out to buy Bitcoin, Alabama Securities Commissioner Director Joseph Borg told CNBC on Monday. People do credit cards, equity lines, taking on household debt for a wild gamble at getting rich quick. I'm very pro Bitcoin. I'm pro cryptocurrency. I don't think that I would go that far in investing. I think that's a little bit dangerous, but anyway. And it's going to get crazier before the inevitable crash. Federal regulators at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission recently allowed the Chicago Board Options Exchange and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange to begin trading Bitcoin futures. The CBOE's market opened on Sunday, and in their first day of trading, Bitcoin futures accounted for about half of the total trading activity on the stock exchange. I'm not really up on this whole Bitcoin futures trading, so I don't really have a lot of comment on that. Have you been looking at that? Familiar with it?
Yeah, I've been on Bitcoin's trading's platforms. It's just like other kind of stocks and commodities, betting whether the price is going to go high or low, and it's going to go high. That's inevitable. Or John McAfee will eat his genitals live on TV, as it were.
Oh, gosh, that's crazy. So anyway, this outrageous experiment in fraud and foolishness has in the past few months created several millionaires. It is also meaningless, dangerous, and a very good reason to be worried about the Republican Party's new tax cut for the super rich. What? Wait a great segue there. No, not really. Bitcoin enthusiasts refer to it as a cryptocurrency, a word that has no real meaning other than things like Bitcoin. In practice, Bitcoin is something that people can buy and sell, but it has no inherent use or value itself. No inherent use? Huh. It's a currency. Yeah, that has use. Hey, what about the blockchain? Does that have an inherent use? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it does. It's supposed to mimic the function of money. Nobody believes that there's $20 worth of paper and ink in a $20 bill. Correct. But we agreed to let those green things with Andrew Jackson's face on them serve as a store of value and a medium of exchange. No, that's where legal tender laws come in. Unlike actual money, however, Bitcoin isn't dependent on a government for its value. It's worth whatever people will buy and sell it for. Like, that's a bad thing. Oh, gosh. The stupid it burns. Go ahead and read this or don't read it. Bitcoin is an insult to markets or the GOP tax cuts. If you need a good laugh, go ahead and read it.
I love how their argument against it is always they just need, there's no oversight.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming out tonight, Cal. It's always a pleasure. Thanks to everybody for listening. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms.
Stay liberated.
Stay baconated, my friends.